Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Hope you guys are having a great week. It's been a while. Been a while since we last talked. However, we're back with a big show this week, a 90-minute edition of the show. Buckle up. You know, don't go to work. If you're listening to this driving to work, just keep driving. Just keep driving. Listen to this show. Don't go in. I give you permission. Why is this show so long? Well, because we are kicking off one of my favorite times of year. This is the year-end stuff. Year-end, year-in-review. We're doing a bunch of year-in-review stuff for the website coming up here in a couple weeks. And we are also kicking off this series of the MMA year-in-review. And we're going to start out with January through March. Q1 for those in the business world. January, February, March. We're doing that with our good friend Paul Fontaine of this very website and also MMADraws.com. We always seem to kick off with him. Year 3. So we're back. So yeah, we go over pretty much everything from January through March, some of the key happenings and all kinds of stuff, big returns. Going into this, I thought that this 3 months was really a drag because I remember after this 3 months happened, I was like, oh my God, nothing is happening in this this first part of the year. It's really boring, and there were a couple of those things. But in talking with Paul through this conversation, kind of going through some things, there turned out to be some pretty notable news events. So we get into that again over this 90-minute talk. We actually kick off a little bit. We're talking about UFC Winnipeg coming up this Saturday, which Paul is going to be cage side for, as well as just a few minutes on UFC 220, this great show coming up in Boston, Massachusetts. About an hour down the road from me, I'm very excited to be going to that show. And coming up, Francis Ngannou taking on Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier taking on Volkan Ozdemir. Two great fights, title fights, and I cannot wait. So we get to talk about that, UFC Winnipeg, and also the year that was, or the Q1 that was, January, February, March in 2017. So let's get right to it with Paul Fontaine. Sit back, relax, enjoy. Well, my friends, this year is coming to an end, unfortunately. Actually, probably fortunately for a lot of people. And 2017 was a very notable year. And as we do every single year this time, we take a look back at the world of mixed martial arts. And we are joined by someone that has helped us kick off this series for the past 2 years. So he's back for year three. I'm very happy to note it. Taking a look at January, February, and March of 2017. You know him as a staff writer WrestlingObserver.com, covering obviously different MMA events and also some pro wrestling, some fill-in work as well. And he also has his own site, which is MMADraws.com. And you can follow him on Twitter, all that good stuff. He is the true king of Winnipeg. Forget Omega and Jericho. This is my guy, Paul Fontaine. Paul Fontaine, glad to have him back on the show. And Paul, we'll start with obviously the really tough question, even though you're a multiple-time guest on this very program. How jealous are you of me for being able to look forward and be at UFC 220 in Boston with a main event of Francis Ngannou versus Stipe Miocic and a co-main event of Daniel Cormier and Volkan Ozdemir? Tell me how jealous you are of me.
Wow, that is pretty cool. I mean, I think that's right now pretty much the event on the horizon. So, you're a little lucky. And so you've got Cormier and Ozdemir in your co-main event. And I've got Josh Emmett in my co-main event coming up this weekend in my hometown.
Yeah. So, I mean, I tell you what, I'll take this one. Yeah. I'd be pretty goddamn jealous of me. My hope is that no injuries happen or anything like that. But it's been a few weeks since I've been on. I was really excited they were able to make that fight. Not only make it quick, I assumed they were gonna maybe wait till February and try to get some more build to it. But they, you can tell, man, they really think they have something in Ngannou, and I think a lot of us think they have something in Ngannou as well. Like, they don't want to wait. They want to say, okay, let's get this guy potentially the title in 2 months. Now, a lot can happen. Obviously, Miocic is gonna probably go into this fight as an underdog. But he's a very game fighter. Obviously, he's one title defense away, I believe, from breaking the record for heavyweight title defenses, which is crazy. Think of that in 2017. But they they really love Ngannou, and they made no wasted no time in making this fight for January, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it's I think it was Dave Meltzer that said that this reminds him and me as well of kind of how they rushed John Jones into the title scene back in 2011 or 12, whenever it was, mm-hmm. when he had that big win on TV, and then they put him right in the title fight. And, and luckily he won, and then, that kind of kicked him off. And obviously that's the hope, that Ngannou wins the belt and maybe has a couple defenses next year. Cause I mean, other than that, potentially, I mean, it's not looking real good for the other big names in UFC in terms of fighting anytime in the near future.
So you mentioned this weekend coming up in your hometown, in Winnipeg there. You are going to be cage side for us covering UFC on Fox with a very fun main event. And there's been a lot of interesting fights. Obviously, every single weekend there's been shows. But this is it's a Fox one, so it's got a pretty great main event. We get to see Robbie Lawler, former welterweight champion, coming back, taking on Rafael Dos Anjos. He looked great at welterweight since going back up. So this is this is one of those fights that is I can't see how it's going to be a bad fight. It's possible, but I'm really looking forward to it because there's so much interest for me on both sides with kind of the story of where these guys go from here. Obviously, card has changed around a little bit. It's supposed to be Ricardo Lamas versus Jose Aldo in the co-main event. Obviously, we know what happened with that and some other interesting fights on the show. What's your gut feeling going into Saturday?
Well, I'm obviously looking really forward to the main event as well. I think I'm also Glover Teixeira and Misha Serkinov that'll probably kick off the main card. I'm really kind of looking forward to that one. Should be kind of a fun, fast, violent, kind of fight, which are usually pretty good on TV. Other than that, you look up and down the card, it's just a lot of big names, a lot of Canadians, as they tend to do when they step outside the country. But and then some guys that are, kind of call Canada home, even though they weren't necessarily born here. But, it should be a really good show. I don't sense it doing anything great ratings wise. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if it maybe approached the all time low, but, that won't really hurt the fight quality, and the fans should be really into it. I mean, the only other time they were here was, the very forgettable UFC 161. We had a great crowd, good gate. I've seen there's still a lot of tickets available, but all the high priced ones are gone. So it should be, they should do a really good gate for a TV show. And, there's a little bit of buzz around town. Obviously a lot of people that know me know I'm into MMA and get a lot of people every day coming up to me and asking me about it. And just had someone offer me tickets today, actually. And it's like, no, I'm covering the event, so I don't need tickets, but I'll pass the word along if anybody's looking. So,
looking at this card, there's as you well know, I love crossroads fights, and I love when veterans are kind of like, where are they at in their career? And there's a few on here. I will tell you, I am very jealous because you're going to get to see Mike Perry fight, and I think he's a lot of fun. I will kind of see where he's at against Santiago Ponzinibbio. I think that's a really interesting fight, obviously on the main card on Fox. So look for that one. I think, I really like this this main card. Obviously, the Lamas Emmett fight, it is what it is. But I mean, you have a couple guys. You mentioned some Canadians, Jordan Meehan, kind of seeing where he's at in his career against Eric Silva, the prospect that never was, but is still kind of hanging around. And interesting there. You have a crossroads fight in John McDessie versus Abel Trujillo. Tim Elliott coming back, obviously at flyweight, and it just, when I think of Tim Elliott, I think of he's the guy that gave Demetrius Johnson a run for his money. And we haven't seen that a lot, in that after that tough season, obviously Chad Laprise. And, there are some interesting fights on the show and a couple crossroads fights and so on. So yeah, I think this should be a pretty fun show you're going to see.
Yeah. One I'm really looking forward to is, not a lot of people will be talking about this one, but middleweight fight between Julian Marquez and Darren Stewart. Marquez is he's a teammate of Tom Lawler, and I've seen quite a few of his fights, even not in UFC. And this guy, he's a great interview and a powerful guy, knockout artist. And I think could be a potential star down the road if he can string together a few wins. So I'm kind of really looking forward to that one. And that might be one of these ones where in a couple of years you'll be like, oh, yeah, I saw him win.
You can see that on FS1. That is second from the top from the prelim cards. Main card on Fox, FS1, and then a couple fights on Fight Pass, as it were. All right. Well, let's get to the main event of the night. We have, obviously, January, February, March. And for those that have not listened to these shows before, here's how we do it. So I go through the BloodyElbow.com archives. They do a really good job of make it very easy to go through the archives. And I go through page by page, and it lists all the different posts, and I pick out some of the notable happenings from the month. News, signings, any of those type of things. Fights, obviously, events, results, USADA violations, all those type of things, and kind of compile them. Not every single one, but the ones that I remember really standing out. And I will I pull them aside. I pull out the top three. We discuss those, and I kind of go over the list of the rest. Paul will kind of jump in and afterwards, and any of those that he that stood out for him during that month. And away we go. So we'll start with January. I would say this quarter overall, though, Paul, January, February, March. Not to get you too depressed from the start, this was a real letdown compared to 2016, which was. As you know, it was just so great. There was you know, no injuries, relatively few injuries. Big fights were made. We had all the stars were fighting McGregor and so on. And it just was a really fun year. That Madison Square Garden show, that was so big, and you know, fun December show. It was just a magical year, 2016. And now, as we move into 2017, just kind of set the stage. This quarter was not really that fun. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, coming off the end of 2016, I mean, we definitely had some ideas of what might come, but, you know, nothing ever really materialized. And even kind of looking over your list, it's like, yeah, a whole bunch of news about people that were really big in 2016 that we probably weren't going to hear a lot in 2017. But, you know, it's MMA and there's always something going on. So we'll definitely have a lot of stuff to talk about.
Very true. So let's kick off with what I thought was one of the top three big storylines going on in January. As you mentioned, it's really left over from 2016. That was Ronda Rousey. Obviously, that very late December loss, a New Year's Eve weekend show, if you want to call it that, with her loss to Amanda Nunes and a bad one at that. We obviously Rousey has not fought since, but this was kind of everyone's questioning what happens next because we really didn't know. You know, Dana White saying, you know, he hugged her for 45 minutes. Everyone was wondering what was happening. Everyone had an opinion. She should change camps. She should do this. She should do that. And White actually saying that Rousey's probably done. Her home was vandalized that month. So she had just a terrible month overall. But it was just this, you know, we still have this today, really just a question about what is Rousey like. What is Rousey today? Is she going to, are we interested in seeing her fight again, which I still think would be yes, but B, if so, where, against who, what does she have left? What does she have to do to get back to that level? There was just a lot of questions throughout the first part of the month of January about what Ronda Rousey was after that devastating loss to Nunes.
Yeah, it, you know, like I think anybody watching that fight kind of sensed that the fact that she lost, the way she lost, you know, it was pretty much before she'd even left the cage. People were speculating, okay, she's probably done. And then, you know, Dana White's comments afterwards, you know, really kind of cemented that. And I mean, it's really like, what else does she do at this point? I mean, I think, you know, given enough time, if she does decide to come back, you know, in a year or two, you know, people will forget. They'll be interested in seeing her for sure. I'm sure it'll do business. In the past, with really big draws, having a loss sometimes hurts, but not always. It certainly didn't hurt Conor McGregor. You know, she's not this unbeatable force that she came in as, but she's still bigger than the sport for sure. And I think someone that people are going to be very interested in seeing, but, you know, I definitely think the next time we see Ronda Rousey in any kind of a ring or a cage, it's, most likely going to be for WWE.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah. I think back to this and I don't, I'm definitely interested in seeing her fight again for sure if she was into it. But you remember how she was that whole week leading up, not doing media, and was just really just didn't seem to be having – she appeared to be joyless and just not having fun with any of this. And the last thing you want to see, obviously fighting is a serious sport and what have you, but you want to see someone that's at least like interested in being there and makes you like, you kind of go on the ride with them. And it was just this, like, just this wall. And it's almost like the built up over time, this wall of celebrity around her, and that she didn't need any of us. And, you know, those type of things, just that she didn't need any of what kind of built her up to begin with. And then when she lost, it was just kind of like, all right, this is going to be it. So I'd be interested in seeing her fight again, but only if she's interested in doing it and really is kind of willing to embrace this group of us, fans, media, whatever you want to call us, is that we kind of helped get her there. We came along the ride with her. We'd love to kind of write this redemption story, but only if she's interested in talking to us, I guess.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, with all that stuff, she took a lot of criticism for the way she handled herself and not wanting to meet and all that, and then it pretty much worked out, you know, like, in terms of the buy rate, yeah. In terms of the interest in the show. I mean, you know, it had everything going against it. It was on a Friday night. It was, you know, on a holiday weekend. Rhonda not doing any media. Amanda not really being a kind of a marketable, well, you say challenger, she was a champion, but, you know, she's kind of presented almost as a challenger. And yet all that going against it, it still did, you know, over 1 million buys. So I think that proves that, you know, that there is obviously interest in her, despite whether or not she is, you know, terribly interested in promoting it or even being there.
So we then go to another interesting person that may have that definitely fought their last fight, even though this feels like it's kind of an asterisk with that one. Bellator 170, Tito Ortiz, his last ride, his riding off in the sunset after this, actually literally riding off in the sunset. I think that was the image on the video board as he's walking out. Submitting Chael Sonnen and retiring. This was his retirement fight, and there was a lot of trash talk going into this. You know, some really bizarre places that both these guys went. You know, Sonnen referencing Jenna Jameson, Tito Ortiz's ex-wife, and anyway, so Bellator 170, Tito Ortiz submitting Chael Sonnen and retiring. There was obviously the post deal and the cage and the walking out and all that good stuff. But what was interesting about this, this was a, if you remember, that there was some controversy over whether Ortiz held a rear naked choke in too long. And then there was some talk about where the fight was fixed, which seems to always come with Bellator main events, with these kind of, I want to say, over the hill stars, but, you know, the bigger names as opposed to, you know, people kind of in the normal flow of things. And this was it was such a Bellator big show, you know, just there was talking, two interesting names, not much of a fight. You know, one guy winning, but winning in a way that made things kind of seem very strange. And I don't think the fight was fixed by any means, but it's just the fact that discussion happened around it. This was like so Bellator. It was a great way for them to start out 2017.
Well, it's funny, like, when you say, you know, people thought it was fixed, and I mean, if you were going to fix it, you're probably not going to have the guy that's retiring submit the guy that's sticking around in the first round. So, you know, and the same kind of thing happened with Shamrock and Gracie, where people thought, you know, that was fixed the way it went down. And it's just, you know, what you got to remember is you've got these guys fighting that, I mean, Chael is a little closer to his peak, but he's well past it. And Tito Ortiz's peak was, you know, it seems like a century ago. So, you know, you're going to have some weird stuff happen when you got guys like that fighting. And it's funny, like, this was really, I mean, you know, the last high watermark for Bellator in 2017. I mean, it kind of started off with a bang and it just went almost straight downhill from there. And, you know, and now we've got coming up, you know, they haven't really done any of these freak show fights that have done, you know, big business for them. And that was really the last one. And now we've got, you know, this heavyweight tournament coming up. So, I mean, that may, you know, bring them back some of these big audiences, but, you know, whether or not people are even aware that they're around anymore is, kind of makes me wonder, because again, like, I don't know what, you know, really anyone else gained from this other than one night of good TV ratings. You know, it certainly didn't make anybody else on the card a bigger star. Paul Daly had a nice knockout in the co-main, but other than that, I mean, you know, I follow this stuff. I live and die by it. And I'm looking at the card right now, and I don't remember none of this.
This was Sonnen's first fight, and Ortiz submitted him. It was about 2 minutes in the first round, and this was Sonnen's first fight on his deal. He obviously later in the year would beat Wanderlei Silva. Well, do you think that Bellator has got their money's worth out of Sonnen this year?
No. I mean, I don't think they've really got their money's worth out of anybody that they've signed really since Rampage Jackson. Well, Kimbo, Ken, I guess. But, I don't know how much he was paying them, but definitely not Chael. I mean, maybe in other ways, like he's a very good promoter for the company. I mean, he's entertaining on TV. Personally, I think he's a terrible commentator, but he's a good promoter.
And you said that for a while too. I remember you did a column for us about that.
Yeah, yeah. In World Series of Fighting, he's the worst, but he's he's entertaining, you know. So I mean, that's worth something, and he's a great promoter. But you'll notice he's not on the broadcasts as much anymore. So maybe somebody else thinks the same way. The book's not closed on him. I mean, if he, if he makes a run in this tournament coming up, or if he has another couple big fights, I mean, it could end up paying off for him. I mean, it's my kind of attitude on this, like with all of these guys that they're signing, it's not really helping Bellator at all. But if the guys themselves are getting paydays out of it, I'm glad for them. I mean, and it makes it interesting for hardcores like us, you know, whether the masses are flocking to these fights or not, is another story. But I mean, we're getting a lot of interesting fights that we wouldn't otherwise have gotten with, guys coming into Bellator when their contracts run out, and it's giving, options. And it's probably, if it's not already at some point, it's going to increase their pay, because if there's competition in the marketplace, obviously the guys that UFC really wants to keep, they're going to have to, spend some money. And then of course, Bellator, the guys they're really interested in, they're going to up the ante on them too. So, competition is good for everyone. And, until Bellator runs out of money, I guess, but it doesn't really seem like that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yep. I would wholeheartedly agree. And I think that's good for the sport. It helps keep UFC on its toes. And without a union, I think that's a really good thing to have. So yeah, we'll take a few Chael Sonnens if it means guys like Rory McDonald and Lorenz Larkin and some of those guys get paid. Let's see, number three for the month. The third biggest storyline. UFC on Fox 23. This was a show that didn't do that well in the ratings, as you very well know. But this was headlined by Valentina Shevchenko submitting Juliana Pena. In the main event, we had Francis Ngannou, who we talked about earlier, crushing Andrei Arlovsky, kind of beginning his big 2017. And Jorge Masvidal, a little bit of a surprise, really just running through Donald Cerrone. Cerrone started to, as we'd see later in the year, start to kind of tick down a little bit when it comes to his fighting skills, his body, and so on and so forth. But Jorge Masvidal coming up with a big dominant win over Donald Cerrone. So yeah, this one didn't really do a lot in the ratings, even though it was a fun main card to watch. Why did you think this one didn't do that well?
Well, it's funny. At the time, we definitely thought it didn't do well. It was it was ahead of only one show on Fox in the previous 2 years, but it turned out to be the biggest rating on Fox for the year. Was that a sense? Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's not to say it wasn't a bad number. It's just, is this the new normal? I don't know. Or are they just, are they really redoing the way they're doing their Fox shows and not, they were loading up on them early in the contract and now, you're getting these kind of fights. They're not title fights. They're not even necessarily number one contender fights, although in this case it was. They're trying to get a showcase out there for their people. And if, 2 million or a little over, a little under 2 million people watch, great. And if they happen to luck out and get a show like that Holly Holm, Valentina Shevchenko one from the previous year, then they get a sense, okay, maybe this person's a star and we can put them on pay-per-view. But, I think obviously this was the first big stage for Francis Ngannou. And, he delivered big time, knocking out a former champ that, some people thought might still have a little bit of a run in him, and now it turns out probably not. You know, Donald Cerrone, that's kind of kicked off a bad year for him, losing you know, by knockout to Jorge Masvidal. You know, and then you know, a really fun fight in the that opened it up with Jason Knight and Alex Caceres. So it was a really good card. But yeah, it was, you know, at the time, you know, kind of looked at it like, wow, that was you know, maybe not a very good number. But by the end of the year, it's like, okay, well, maybe this is where we're at now with Fox, and we'll see. You know, we'll see how we do this weekend. But you know, they did get $3 million at the peak. So you know, Valentina Shevchenko. I do think there was some interest in her coming off the win over Holly Holm, but you know, it didn't necessarily materialize going forward. So, but you know, they tried, and you know, definitely putting that fight in a main event was an experiment, and I'm not sure it was a failure. You know, it was something they did, and yeah, she went on to challenge for the title, lost a split decision. So, you know, I don't think the jury's out on Shevchenko, and I'd like to see her in a big high-profile fight again, maybe in the flyweight division.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before. She doesn't do anything for me. I don't find her that interesting. I mean, she has an interesting backstory, obviously, but I don't know what it is. It's just something that just doesn't really do it for me, watching her fight or anything like that. But, you know, on the flip side, Juliana Pena, I thought at one point, coming off tough, I thought there was something there, whether it was going to be kind of being more of a heel, so to speak, and just yeah. You know, she seemed to kind of have that characteristic about her, and doing some interviews, and she had a really terrible year, actually really bad year, personal, in cage, out of cage, and this was you know, that this was essentially going to be a title eliminator, and she just didn't really show up, and then Shevchenko just kind of ran through her. So I don't know, I think women's 135 is kind of in
dead.
Yeah, it's in a yeah. I would definitely say it needs some work in a lot of ways. Maybe it was going to be, you know, it was going to happen anyway after you know, after Rousey left. The drop was going to be huge anyway. But there's just not a lot there. I mean, we're looking at what Nunes versus oh my God, what is her name? Raquel Pennington, potentially. Oh. And she's, I mean, she's still going to be out with this injury. She had an ATV accident. There's really just no one else left. It really fell off the face of a, fell off a cliff, like, quick.
Oh, and you talk, and I kind of felt the same way as you about Juliana Pena. And I would be neglect if I didn't mention when I talked about horrible commentators, you got to check out Juliana Pena on these Combate America shows. She takes it to another level. She's not good. But you know, it's kind of in that kind of heel way, you know, where, you know, I think where she is that kind of person that I think people would pay to see lose. But yeah, it's just never hasn't worked out for her at all. I think she needed to get a couple big wins over popular people, and it just never kind of happened. And now she's out. I think she's pregnant, I think.
She is, yeah.
Yeah, so she, you know, we're not going to see her for a while. But, you know, I other than that, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, Raquel Pennington is your number one contender. I mean, that division's in trouble. And people are kind of moving up to fight Cyborg, or they're moving down because the flyweight division's, I think, is going to end up being the marquee division for women in probably a couple of years. Definitely not right now, but, you know, give it a couple of years. There's a lot of talent in and out of UFC that, you know, could make that division really interesting. Mm. And if Paige VanZant becomes a player in that division, she's still really young. I do think that she's a potential superstar. You know, you got Valentina Shevchenko, you got others. You could even, at some point, Misha Tate could come back, and 125 is perfect for her.
Mm, so, interesting. Yeah, yeah. I would agree. Very, very interesting to see where that is. Even a year from now, I think that'll be, we'll be talking about that a lot next year. So let's go over the rest of the month, some of the big hits, storylines, and so on. Cody Garbrandt, of course, this was the year of calling out for quote unquote super fights, money fights, anyone else other than people in your division. He wanted Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor for his next fight. He would eventually settle for a spot on Tough 25 being a coach. coaching against his fun rival, old rival in the TJ Dillashaw. This was the redemption season. I really like this season. We'll talk about this more later in the year. But this was the redemption season, bringing guys back. I really just love this concept. And Cody versus TJ would be your coaches. Joe Rogan said that Nick Diaz decided to pass on a rematch against Robbie Lawler, making all of us very sad. Of course, we didn't really hear much from Nick Diaz about that, but that was pretty depressing to hear that news. Speaking of Robbie Lawler, he decided to leave his longtime team at ATT, so that was a bit of news to kick off the year. UFC hired Todd Grisham, a former WWE guy, and he's been doing a lot of some play-by-play studio work and so on. USADA finally decided to suspend Brock Lesnar for a year, retroactive to UFC 200, meaning he would be eligible to fight again in July, so that was official in January. Mirko Krokop decided to retire again after his Rising Grand Prix win. RDA, we're just talking about him, announced his move back to welterweight, or up to welterweight, rather, at the beginning of the year. Cain Velasquez, big surprise, had back surgery. Haven't seen him at all this year. I threw this one in here because I thought this was kind of fun. Rappers Chris Brown and Soulja Boy planned to do a boxing pay-per-view. That actually never happened. Big surprise about that. Was interesting to see how many buys that would do. It's going to be funny if we actually covered it on our site. UFC 207, speaking of, I was talking about that earlier, confirmed to do 1 million buys. It was the fifth to hit that mark in 2016. Again, talking about how awesome 2016 was. It was great in cage, out of cage, money, all that good stuff. I completely forgot about this. Meryl Streep decided to take a dig at mixed martial arts during the Oscars, saying that is not an art at all, and that resulted in basically the MMA community ripping on Meryl Streep. Never would have thought I saw that headline coming at the beginning of the year. Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson decided to, or it was announced they were going to do a rematch to headline March's UFC 209, Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson in the co-main event. That was obviously a pretty big anticipated show. Earlier in the month, it was rumored or basically discussed that Michael Bisping and Woodley will actually do a champion versus champion catchweight fight in May. Of course, later in the month, Bisping announced knee surgery. And again, this was everyone trying to get bigger fights and when it was in their division. And Woodley ended up getting Thompson again in a rematch that we ended up not really needing to see again after how boring it was. UFC announced they were going to cancel his show the night before UFC 209 just to kind of cut back on the schedule a bit. We started really kind of getting some of the first realistic rumblings that Mayweather-McGregor was going to happen. Money started being thrown around, some ridiculous numbers because they're very small, and especially even more ridiculous looking back considering how much money this fight made. Floyd Mayweather said they'll give Conor McGregor $15 million and a cut of pay-per-view. Ariel Helwani was saying that the fight was in the exploratory phase, so was a possibility. Dana White publicly offered Floyd Mayweather $25 million. For the fight, a figure that Mayweather said he had made maybe about 10 years ago. But you really got a sense throughout the month that the buzz was building and that this is actually a reality. Nate Diaz applied for a boxing license in Nevada, and everyone, Paul, wanted to box. Nick Diaz talked about boxing. Jose Aldo talked about boxing. Obviously, Conor McGregor. So this was a positioning play by these guys just looking to get into a different ring and compete. But, of course, none of them actually did, with the exception of Conor McGregor. Anderson Silva was announced he was going to return for a fight at Brooklyn's UFC 208 against Derek Brunson. Stefan Struve got hurt out of the UFC Halifax main event against Junior Dos Santos in an injury. That bumped up Travis Brown versus Derek Lewis to the main event. Megan Anderson, won the vacant Invicta featherweight title. We hear more from her later in the year, obviously with some relation to Cyborg. And of course, we still kind of don't know what really happened to Megan Anderson at this point. UFC Phoenix, kind of a sad show in a lot of ways if you're into seeing the legends. Yair Rodriguez at featherweight dispatching BJ Penn pretty handily in the main event of that show. Sergio Pettis starting out the year right, beating up on John Moraga. And Joe Lauzon beat Marcin Held in a controversial decision there. Black Zillion's team essentially was dead, was losing fighters left and right, and not a pretty scene there for those that were into that Black Zillion's versus ATT tough season. Tim Kennedy retired after a long run in both Strikeforce and the UFC. Gegard Mousasi versus Chris Weidman was announced for UFC 210 in Buffalo. Mar Moraes, the longtime World Series of Fighting bantamweight champion, was talking to the UFC. Rampage versus King Mo 2 was announced for March. Speaking of World Series of Fighting, they postponed their first event of the year until March, and they would go through some big changes later in the year. Brett Rogers, this was a really weird story. For people that remember Strikeforce and talk about heavyweight Grand Prix, Strikeforce did this tournament several years ago. Brett Rogers was a guy that was not really a great fighter, but kind of came out of nowhere, fought tough against some of the toughest heavyweights that they had to offer. A lot of years later, following some hard times, arrested for groping men, homeless, just really an overall sad story for the former Strikeforce fighter. UFC was announced to be heading to Buffalo for UFC 210, headlined by Daniel Cormier, defending his light heavyweight championship against Anthony Rumble Johnson in a rematch. Mark Hunt versus the UFC was a big thing again, and basically saying that the upcoming fight he had against Alistair Overeem was essentially forced on him. That was kind of a storyline would go throughout the year. UFC 211 was announced with JDS. Obviously, he was scrapped from that fight in Halifax, but he was rescheduled to fight Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight title at UFC 211 in Dallas. And yeah, that was it for January. So after I said all of that, what stood out to you the most about those stories?
Well, I think obviously the very beginnings of the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather talks are, you know, were pretty interesting. I do remember it was right around this time, probably maybe a little bit before, but couldn't have been much before. I remember hearing Ariel Helwani on a non-MMA podcast that I listened to, and he was brought in because it was a sports podcast in Canada here, and they were, you know, this talk was first happening, and they asked him what he thought about it, and at the time he said, "Oh, this is ridiculous. It'll never happen. It's like having a football player go against a soccer player. You know, they're two different sports, even though they have similarities. They're different sports, and just the idea of it is ridiculous, and it'll never happen." This isn't a criticism of Ariel Helwani, because that would be the natural thing for anybody to think that really thought about it. But money talks, and within a few months, I mean, this fight was signed, and within a few more months, it happened. And I think even in January, when they were talking about this, I mean, just the idea that UFC would let their biggest star box, you know, regardless of what the money was, just to me seemed implausible. And I mean, the downside to me ahead of time, I just thought there's no way they could let him do this, but they did. And now we're seeing the effects of it. And I think that tremendously short-sighted move by UFC, you know, because they needed money and they got a cut of the pay-per-view, but I mean, they took their biggest star and they may never have him again. So, I think that, you know, it didn't belong necessarily in the top three of events that happened in January, but it sure, this was kind of setting the table for the rest of the year for sure. Mm.
So now we move on to February, and February was a very, very light month. I mean, I could not believe there was not a lot that happened in February. However, we finally had the resolution on a story that had been dating back, it felt like decades, but it just this very bizarre path to get to George St. Pierre returning to the UFC, signing a deal and coming back after a long time of talking, a long time of public posturing with inexplicably Dana White just saying that GSP didn't want to come back. And it is amazing that a superstar that was shown such disrespect and just disdain for him actually decide, yeah, I still want to come back to the organization here. And I guess he really didn't have a choice given his contract. But February, the biggest story of the month, GSP, UFC coming to terms of return. We did not know when. We did not know where. We just kind of knew some rumors. Basically, the thought was he was going to fight against maybe Tyron Woodley or perhaps against Conor McGregor or perhaps against Michael Bisping. And that was the one that got people's head scratching a little bit. They're kind of like, well, why would he go to 185? And we kind of figure that out a little bit later. But February, GSP and UFC finally coming to terms and reunited, and it felt so good.
Yeah, it was definitely something that had been talked about for years. Like I said, I mean, it feels – I mean, when he left, if you think about the MMA world in 2013 – I mean, Ronda Rousey had just started. Conor McGregor had fought in UFC, but he was, you know, he'd been on a prelim on a fight night show. I mean, he was something people were talking about, but he was nowhere near what he was. And, you know, the big stars at the time were Anderson Silva and, you know, John Jones. And, you know, now he comes back and it's, you know, it's a completely different world. And it's something that, you know, as time went on, you just started to think, can this ever happen? And I guess it's kind of like the McGregor Mayweather thing, you know, money talks, and I don't know what they paid him, but obviously it was enough. And he got, you know, he got the terms he wanted. He got to fight a guy that, you know, obviously, you know, he felt was beatable, but also had a reputation for being clean. And that's, you know, something that's very important to GSP as well. So, you know, I think that in the end, he got everything he wanted, and hopefully we're going to see him again at some point, because right now, unless Francis Ngannou turns out to be something, he's pretty much all they got in terms of big draws.
Yeah. I remember GSP saying at the time that when asking kind of about how the negotiations went or what kind of put it really past the finish line, he mentioned the, you know, in negotiation, both people, to kind of paraphrase it, both sides are a little bit sore afterwards, you know, that they're a little bit angry because they didn't necessarily get everything they wanted, but they got enough where they're able to come together in a deal. The Under Armour thing, you know, yeah. that was a big you know, a big stumbling block early on, and you know, he wore Reebok later in the year, obviously with the Bisping fight, so that didn't turn out to be an issue at all. USADA, obviously, that being in play, I think it was a big factor, and he just seemed to be ready to come back, and I think that was good. I'm still surprised they were just so adversarial against him, and maybe I shouldn't be so surprised considering kind of the parties involved with Dana White, but. Just that you had this guy that was such a, you know, he basically had a country on his back when it came to that era we were just talking about. And, you know, with Anderson Silva and GSP, I mean, essentially he was Canadian MMA in a lot of ways. And when they did those shows in Montreal and Toronto and so on, he was, you know, he was a huge star. He was a huge star in the States too. I mean, people know GSP, and obviously that drawing power helped when it came to November. I still sit back and I'm like, why were they such pricks to him? You know, publicly, I just don't get it. And I think we kind of figure out it's just, you know, a bitterness from maybe what happened after that 20th anniversary show when he said he was essentially going to retire, but didn't give a heads up or whatever. But, yeah, GSP came back, I'm glad he did.
Yeah, well, and again, you've been following this sport long enough to know. I mean, look at the way, you know, Dana's treated Anderson Silva in the past, and, you know, even the Diaz brothers, and, you know, just guys that don't really play, you know, that like to play by their own set of rules, Dana's not a real big fan of. So, you know, I should be surprised that you'd treat your golden goose like that, but nothing with Dana White surprises me. And nothing he says, I believe. So,
yeah, well put. So one star re-enters the fray, and another one officially decide to leave. However, you know, this seems to always be subject to change, as it is with the man known as Brock Lesnar. Mentioned in January the suspension from USADA. But, you know, he officially retired from MMA. It wasn't a, you know, a big announcement or anything like that, but it was, you know, it just essentially he was done. And I would not be surprised to see him fight again because he likes money and he likes big stages and big opportunities. And, you know, later in the year when John Jones made his return and all of a sudden decided to call out Brock Lesnar, everyone's antennas went up of like, my God, I need to see this ASAP. I will be there front row, whatever it takes to see this. Just an amazing, just thinking about that now, even everything that's happened, would still love to see that fight. However, in February, Brock Lesnar decided to retire from MMA. MMA obviously focusing on WWE, where he is, you know, now the Universal Champion. And, yeah, I mean, when you heard, you know, Brock Lesnar retiring back in the day, was it a... You know, or back in February, rather, was it a surprise to you? Were you kind of like, ah, you know, he could come back any time, or did you take this as really serious stuff?
Well, what I took it as was that Brock wasn't terribly interested in being tested anymore, and as long as he was an active fighter, he's in the testing pool, and he has to report his whereabouts and all that. So by quote unquote retiring, he takes himself out of the testing pool. Mm. Now, of course, when he unretires. He had that 1 year suspension that he still has to fulfill. So the reason everyone's antennas went up at the time with the John Jones thing was, you know, you start doing the math and you think, okay, well, if he unretires after SummerSlam, he's got 5 months left to serve. That would make him free to fight on the year-end show in Las Vegas, which, you know, is typically a big show. And if John Jones hadn't have done what John Jones does, you know, that would have been a huge fight. Now we've got, you know, he's still retired. He's still in WWE. He's going to be at the Royal Rumble. I'm sure he's going to be at WrestleMania. But, you know, if Francis Ngannou wins the heavyweight title, I'm sure UFC is going to maybe try to throw Brock some money and get him to come back. And a win over former UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar would probably mean a lot more in the eyes of casual fans than, you know, beating anyone on the current roster. So I would not be surprised at all if we start hearing rumors of that fight coming to be in the next 6 months to a year.
Hmm. Interesting. I hadn't really thought of that before, but if you're really trying to get a guy over to a mainstream sports fan, why not bring in a guy that is well known to them, being Brock Lesnar, a guy that's drawn, you know, a million pay-per-view buys several times in his career in main events, and obviously a big star. You bring him in to essentially, you know, there's a chance he could beat Ngannou, but I mean, an Ngannou knockout not only just kind of gets that rub from Brock Lesnar, just it kind of helps almost close a chapter and then really open up a new one. And yeah, I think that'd be pretty interesting to see. I guess we'd have to see how this fight in January goes down. But I would see that, you know, if they really want to, I don't want to say sacrifice Brock Lesnar, but either, you know, either Stipe or Ngannou, depending on what happens in January, that could potentially be a, you know, a fun fight for the summer. You can hear the cries of people saying, wait a minute, Brock has not fought, you know, he's fought, you know, twice in the past 4 years or whatever it's been. How is he getting heavyweight title shot? But as we saw throughout this whole year, that doesn't seem to matter anymore.
No, and I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, Ngannou or Miocic would be favored in that fight, but I remember when he came back to fight Mark Hunt, and I mean, obviously, that's a very different fighter than Francis Ngannou, but, you know, Hunt was, you know, one of the hardest one-punch knockout guys in UFC, and people thought, well, you know, he's just going to get knocked out, and Brock beat him.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you know, he had that win overturned, but he beat him. And, you know, so he's coming off of that. And again, he's Brock Lesnar, you know, would it surprise anyone if, you know, even like a Nick Diaz came back and got a title shot? No, of course not. I mean, they're going to give title shots to who they think is going to draw the most money. That's what this business is now. It's a business. It's a sport, but it's a business. And sometimes I'm really not sure which is first. In fact, I think I actually know which one is first, and it's not sport.
Yep.
So, you know, I again, like I'm a big fan of the sport of MMA, but, you know, Brock Lesnar against Francis Ngannou, sign me up.
Yep.
I'd love to see that.
I know. I feel dirty saying it, but yeah, I would agree as well. So the third, actually, I want to ask you one more GSP question. When he came back, do you remember who you wanted him to fight?
I think in the back of my head, I was thinking it was probably going to be Nate Diaz, but, I'm trying to think now. I want to say Connor. Like I was thinking like the Connor fight, but then it was right around the same time as the Mayweather stuff was going on. So I thought, okay, it's probably not going to be Connor. I wasn't at all interested in Woodley. I'm still not.
Yeah.
Just the dynamic of that fight doesn't appeal to me at all. I would like to see a Diaz fight, and there's some other ones, you know, out there that, you know, Silva maybe, you know, but yeah, not, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I was just interested more in just seeing him, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I was trying to think back who I wanted to see him fight. I mean, the McGregor fight obviously would be a lot of fun, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see that at some point, you know, I was talking to Mark Armandi about that, or whoever it was, that, you know, he's basically in this class now where, you know, you want to see him fight interesting fights, and it seems to be kind of a group of guys that small group of guys that could be against. But yeah, I was trying to think back against it. Bisping was not on the top of my list by any means, and ended up turning out great, but yeah, at the time definitely was not at the top of the list. So the third biggest story, and I have this, you know, kind of tongue in cheek on this one, but there is kind of a serious tone to this. It's really kind of related to someone that not really works for our site, but does a show on our site. Tom Lawler. In February, he was suspended for 2 years following a USADA violation. And I include this on here, one, because obviously it's notable to our universe, the F4W Empire, you know, that group. But, you know, he is he's a friend. He is someone that we know quite well. Again, he does a show. And this was my first kind of real interaction with someone a fighter that I know that I got flagged for one of these things. And you kind of ask them, you know, what's going on? And you have to take them at their word. And Tom told me, and he didn't have to tell me anything, but he just basically told me, he's like, I didn't do anything. And we're trying to look into what we can look into. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't know what the process was or where it failed or whatever, but they had enough on him, or they had something there, and he kind of accepted it and moved on. And he's still under UFC contract. They obviously didn't release him like they did Frank Mir later in the year, but he's, you know, Tom's made starting to make a nice living for himself as a pro wrestler, seems to be having a lot of fun with it, doing a lot of crazy matches, going against guys like Matt Riddle, you know, and as, you know, using some of the fame he had from his UFC days, and obviously some notoriety doing stuff for our site, and now is parlaying that into an interesting, nice little career. And who knows if he comes back and fights again. I would assume that he would at some point, but I put this down just because with some guys, I mean, maybe we have to, and I think we kind of knew this already, is that perhaps this USADA thing and how it works, maybe, are we sure that it's not flawed along the way? How does the appeals process work? What evidence do they have? Kind of look at the whole situation. But, you know, Tom says he didn't take anything, and I have to believe him just because of what I know of him. But, you know, I may be naive at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you, and I mean, I talked to Tom around the time that this happened, like quite a bit, and you know, he shared some stuff with me, and like my attitude on this always, whenever I heard about it from anyone, you know, whether it was UFC or any other sport, you know, like someone gets flagged, it's okay, yeah, well, they must have done it. I mean, they test everyone. And, you know, they don't catch everyone. So if they find something in your system, they must have done it. But when you really looked at Tom's case, I mean, the amounts of the ostrinine that was found in there was it was over the limit, but it was very small. And, you know, I don't know how that would get into whatever it was. Tom says he doesn't even take supplements. So he wasn't going with the tainted supplement defense. He was going with that, I don't know how this got in my system, you know, defense, whether it was, you know, if he drank a smoothie that someone else had, whatever it was, you know, he failed. And the reason that he says that, you know, he didn't pursue it any further than he did, and he did do, you know, some preliminary stuff, but he kind of played it out. And I mean, the fact is, it would have cost him a lot of money to appeal this, probably more money than he would have made from fighting if it was successful. And if it wasn't successful, he's out all this money. So what do you do? You know, he still has his, you know, he still trains fighters at his Syndicate MMA gym, which I think is probably his main source of income. He is one of the higher, you know, paid guys on the mid card of the UFC roster. So, you know, like in that sense, like you think, okay, well, with that kind of money that he's making, but he said, even with that, you know, he's given up, you know, probably a year's worth of fighting income to appeal this with no guarantee that he's going to win.
Yeah.
He talked a lot to Tim Means, who did appeal it, who did fight it, who did everything, and he got his suspension reduced, but he spent a lot of money. And Tom, you know, he's got two young children. He's got a newlywed. He just wasn't prepared to spend that kind of money on something that he wasn't even sure if it would be successful. So he just, you know, decided to take the 2-year suspension. And yeah, I think in his own mind, he thought, you know, maybe I don't even come back and fight. Maybe I do. We'll see where I'm at in 2 years. But, you know, hopefully they'll let me do wrestling. And they did. So, you know, that was, I guess, the only bright thing that came out of this for him. You know, he's getting to do that wrestling now. I don't know how much he's making. It's definitely not as much as he would have been making in UFC, but seems to be having a lot of fun with it, and he seems to be good at it. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
And he'll be up this year, so we'll see if you know, if he does come back in the octagon or not, or if maybe he gets his release. And I know he's talked about, you know, if they do grant him his release, he might try to, he'd like to fight in Europe for some of those, you know, ACB or M1 Challenge or some of those big shows over there that like to bring in North Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he could headline KSW, bulk up a little bit.
There you go.
Against the world's strongest man, Marius Pudzianowski.
There you go.
All right, let's go over the rest of the month here. A couple of interesting news and notes here, again, in a kind of a slow month. Jake Shields helped a guy avoid a beatdown in a Berkeley riot. Obviously, there was a lot of rioting and all kinds of public unrest this year in the States, and Jake Shields was caught on video actually helping a guy avoid getting his ass kicked. So good on Jake Shields. Paige Van Zandt signed a book deal. I don't know when this book is going to come out, how good it's going to be, how many pages. No, it's not a coloring book for those making the jokes at home. UFC did their usual pre-Super Bowl event in Houston, Fox Sports 1. Korean Zombie returned and just ran through Dennis Bermudez. Really impressive effort, and has not fought since because he got injured. However, he looked very impressive on this one. Felice Herrig really starting what would be a really fun and good year for her in 2017, being a prospect. Alexa Grasso giving her first loss as well. UFC announced there's going to be no slowdown in events for 2017. Plan on doing 41 events total, 13 pay-per-views throughout the course of the year. David Branch, two-division World Series of Fighting champion, much as their champions do, and there's some of their top stars do, kind of having some issues with management, decided to leave the company and side with the UFC. UFC 211 in Dallas got Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Jessica Andrade, and also Fabricio Werdum against Ben Rothwell. However, that Rothwell fight would not happen. We'll talk about that in a minute. Rory McDonald, obviously newly signed to Bellator, got his first debut date against Paul Daly announced for May. So a lot of anticipation there. Talking about Michael Bisping earlier, his feud against Yoel Romero was really heating up, and we were hoping, very excited to potentially see that fight. Obviously, that would not happen throughout the year, and maybe there's still maybe a little bit chance that could happen in Bisping's last fight, but we'll see about that. UFC 212 got Jose Aldo versus Max Holloway in a featherweight title unification bout. Results of UFC 208, a really, really boring card in a lot of ways, other than a fun fight with Dustin Poirier. Jermaine Duranemi controversially beating Holly Holm to become the first women's featherweight champion. However, that reign would end later in the year when she was basically not interested in fighting Chris Cyborg. They stripped the title, and we have not seen her since. This was a fight where, you know, she was hitting home after the bell, and this was just not a fun fight in general. And, you know, during the Iron Lady winning the title, but it's going to be forgotten pretty quickly in history, if all is concerned. Anderson Silva returning and edging out Derek Brunson, another controversial fight there. And like I mentioned, Jacare Souza and Dustin Poirier winning on the show as well. UFN 108, Ultimate Fight Night 108, getting a very bizarre main event. Artem Lobov versus Cub Swanson announced for the main event for Nashville. Go figure. UFC 24 got Michelle Waterson versus Thug Rose in a fight of two budding stars there in the company. Again, I mentioned earlier, Top 25 officially going the redemption route. That was announced. Bellator had some news. They signed Daniel Strauss versus Pitbull, the fourth meeting between those two, Pitbull Frye, Patricky Pitbull versus Daniel Strauss, their fourth meeting for the featherweight championship was announced for later on in the spring. Bellator 172, this was kind of a bizarre situation out in San Jose. Fedor Emelianenko versus Matt Mitrione just a couple hours before the show got scrapped due to Mitrione having kidney stones and having some complications from that. There was all types of last-second opponents being thrown out for Fedor. Chael Sonnen put his hat in the ring. King Mo was there. He wanted to fight. Tito Ortiz even said, we're just talking about not retiring, he threw his hat in the ring. He said he wanted to fight Fedor on that night, but nothing happened. And obviously, Fedor and Mitrione would happen later that year on Bellator's return to pay-per-view. A UFC on Halifax, main event, Derek Lewis knocking out Travis Brown. Travis Brown having a really bad 2017, really kind of the end of his run as an upper-tier heavyweight in UFC. Hector Lombard defeating Johnny Hendricks. Cyborg, Chris Cyborg, I talked about her a few minutes ago, getting a retroactive TUE exception for her fight in December, and there was a lot of talk because she didn't disclose it until after she tested positive. So there's a lot of head scratching going on about how that whole process went down. Again, UFC, I just mentioned that about UFC 211. And finally, public beefs, Paul. This was all what this this is about between UFC head honcho Dana White and his welterweight champion Tyron Woodley deciding to squabble back and forth about fight quality, being a fun fighter, promoter stuff, all that as well. So Tyron Woodley and Dana White deciding to get into it on the Twitter sphere and video sphere and so on and so forth. So we'll throw the microphone over to you. What stands out to you about February?
I think I kind of want to get into that last point a little bit with Tyron Woodley and Dana White. And, if you listen to me at all, you'd kind of think I'm not usually on the side of Dana White. In this case, I actually was. I think Tyron Woodley says a lot and, wants a lot. But when it comes into the cage, I mean, you see his main event performances against, the two fights he had with Wonderboy Thompson and then the Damian Maia fight. I mean, just the kind of fights that just make you never want to see him again. And then he gets on these rampages about how he should be paid more and he should be a bigger star and he should be this and he should be that. And it's like, I'm not saying to go out there and be stupid, or do stupid things. But you got to remember that this is a business as well as a sport. And if the guys that are going to make the money are going to be entertaining in some way, they're going to do the stuff maybe outside the cage like Conor McGregor does and whatnot. But you can be a big star like that without doing that stuff. You look at GSP, Anderson Silva, going back, guys like Chuck Liddell, BJ Penn, these were guys that for the most part did it in the cage, but they were entertaining. And I think that Tyron Woodley needs to remember that. And, and then publicly calling out the promoter when really like you want to get paid more, you got to be worth more. And, if Tyron Woodley left UFC tomorrow and vacated the title, I mean, a lot of hardcores would be upset about it and everything like that, but I don't think it hurts their bottom line one bit, unfortunately. And, so I think that he needs to keep all that stuff in mind. And that's not to say like, I'm excited, I get excited for these Tyron Woodley fights. And then as soon as the fight starts, I remember, oh yeah, I'm watching Tyron Woodley fight. and it's like GSP is not the most exciting fighter in the world either, but and I kind of thought his fight with Bisping was going to suck, but he brought it that night. And again, he's just this larger than life persona outside the cage, and he's not constantly complaining and asking for things that he doesn't deserve and all that stuff. So there's a big difference there, and I just think Tyron Woodley needs to remember that. And I'm sure that's not going to be the most popular opinion, but it's what I feel.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's got the tools there, and we've seen him have some good performances in the past, but there's just too many of these five-round slogfest decisions where it's just like, oh, boy, God. I mean, that Woodley-Thompson rematch was just – it was brutal, absolutely brutal. And he I was really disappointed when, he – and perhaps this is just some public posturing – but when Colby Covington essentially has kind of come to fruition and come to rise, and there doesn't seem to be an immediate challenger for Woodley, and he's just like, nah, I'm really not that interested in that. It's like, oh my God, you finally have someone that can talk some trash and maybe not be the, he's not the, Colby Covington is never going to be compared to Conor McGregor in terms of his charm or in terms of just that crossover ability, but he's at least trying to become an interesting figure, having boomerangs thrown at him on the streets of Australia by Fabricio Werdum. He's just an interesting name. And for Woodley to kind of just be like, I'm all set, and he's saying, now I'm going to have surgery again. But he would have held off surgery for the Nate Diaz fight if that happened, obviously, because, obviously he'd be heavily favored in that fight. But just, I was just kind of disappointed. Like, you have a guy that's there that's talking some talk and will help build some interest. And, I thought that was a good thing. It's just kind of like, I'm all set. It's like, all right, kind of play the game a little bit. So I don't really know what his game is, I guess we'll see what happens with his next fight and who it's actually going to be again. So hopefully be announced here in the next couple of months.
Yeah. And again, in that sense, I'm glad he didn't get the GSP fight. Covington's perfect example. And I even honestly thought, like, would he at some point say, oh yeah, Nate Diaz, nah, he needs to get a tune-up fight before I'll fight him. Like, obviously he didn't say that, but I mean, that's just the stupidest thing you could say if you're interested in making money. you know, or is he just interested in fighting guys that he's, you know, confident he can beat, but aren't going to draw any money? I don't know.
So let's go to March, and actually we'll start off with that fight. We'll kind of get out of the way. UFC 209. This was notable for a few reasons. One, really, I'd say the biggest is that this Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson interim lightweight title fight that was supposed to happen on this show was it was the fight that really to that point everyone was looking forward to. As we kind of went through a slow couple months, and this was the fight that we're like, okay, this is going to help us kind of really kick off the year, you know, 2 months in, right? And just, you know, two guys, top of their game, at the right time. Who cares if it's an interim title? Just, we're going to get this for five rounds on this show. And the fight actually was cut really at the last minute, really. I think it was on that Friday, if I remember right, due to a bad weight cut by Khabib. Dana White said that Khabib was going rogue, so to speak, with his, you know, how he approached talking to the doctors and all this stuff and didn't talk to their doctor. So it's really just a really kind of a gut punch in a lot of ways that we didn't get this fight. We still haven't seen this fight. And, you know, it's been tried to be made a couple times. It just, you know, who knows if we'll ever see it. But, yeah, that was really kind of disappointing. Really took the card itself on paper looked really good. And the fact it was taken off, this really definitely kind of took some of the wind out of its sails, for sure. Especially when we saw the main event, which we just talked about, Tyron Woodley outlasting Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in their rematch, Woodley winning by majority decision. This is just a bad, boring fight in every sense of the word, not good. And to the point that, you know, Thompson came back with a victory against Jorge Masvidal, and really you could say, you know, should he earn another title shot? And the resounding answers are no, because no one wants to see Woodley versus Wonderboy again. So tough on him. You know, another kind of angle with this whole Ferguson thing was he, Michael Johnson was there and said he would have fought Tony Ferguson, but because it wasn't going to be a title fight, the money would actually change. And this was kind of kicking off a dispute we'd hear publicly made about, you know, how much show money that Ferguson was going to get versus win money. And, you know, how much should a fighter get when a fight falls through, and so on and so forth. And then also on the show, Alistair Overeem knocked out Mark Hunt, and, you know, kind of leading some interesting fights for him throughout the year. So UFC 209, it was notable for some, really some kind of disappointing things. Obviously the fighting, with Woodley and Wonderboy, Khabib versus Ferguson being off, but it also had some interesting things as well. So yeah, UFC 209, not really the most memorable show in the world.
No. Yeah. Just looking back over that card, we had, kind of a Rashad Evans middleweight debut, and
Daniel
kind
Kelly.
Of a bad fight, another bad fight. So I think like then you look at even that Overeem Hunt, if I recall right, I mean, the KO came in the last round, but before that it was just kind of the two of them just, you know, kind of dancing around for a while. And it wasn't really a great card. And then you're kind of, as you're going watching, you know, you think, okay, well, we still got this main event to look forward to. The main event's going to be awesome, you know. And it's like, no, it just left a bad taste in the mouth. And then you think about what you could have had with, obviously with that Ferguson fight, or even if Johnson, if they could have made that fight at the last minute.
Yeah.
I know I'm a big Tony Ferguson fan, and you know, and I was kind of disappointed that he didn't take the fight, but you know, I can kind of see where he's coming from as well. You know, like if you're signed for a title fight and then, you know, you're going to get rebooked in a non-title fight that you could lose and then not even get as much money. It's like, why would he take that fight? Like I can understand that. You know, there certainly was a time, you know, back a few years ago when, you know, guys just took these fights, you know, to make the money. And, you know, and we've even seen examples. There's a lot of fights this year that fell out with, you know, a day or two left. I mean, you talked about the Fedor Mitrione fight, and there was other ones over the course of the year. I think there was a record this year of the number of fights that were canceled within 48 hours of the event. And, you know, you still get the odd time, you know, where you'll get something like when we had Fabricio Werdum take a fight with literally like 2 hours notice.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're seeing a lot less of that now just because of the stakes and because these guys are good. You know, like even an entry level guy coming into UFC now probably has, you know, 5-6 years fighting experience, and you know, and a veteran has a lot to lose by taking a fight like that, and you know, taking a knockout loss, and certainly with a guy like Michael Johnson, who's you know, been a top five contender for years, and you got Tony Ferguson, who's been fighting in the UFC for several years, getting his first title shot, and now he's gonna throw that all away because somebody didn't make weight. No, you know, and I guess it played out well for him because he ended up fighting later in the year and he got an interim title, and you know, now he's kind of on top of the division and kind of maybe waiting for Conor McGregor fight that's probably never going to come. But yeah. It was a very disappointing show for sure.
Yeah, and we were really looking forward to this kind of really kicking off the year and getting us out of our rut, and unfortunately that was not the case. However, a couple of guys get out of a financial rut thanks to Bellator. We were just talking earlier about how you know, Bellator has really kind of changed the game with providing a competitor and giving some competitive rates and you know, kind of getting the mix and wanting to build up their roster. Two big signings being official made official in March with Ryan Bader. You know, obviously, he was a top light heavyweight champion or a light heavyweight challenger in UFC, and really, arguably, I think should have got a shot against Daniel Cormier after that that whole press conference deal where he walked up and, you know, really kind of made a name for himself, because he really didn't do that in the past and really was kind of outspoken against DC, never got that title shot. That would have been a lot of fun. However, going to Bellator, things seem to have worked out so far for him. And also Lorenz Larkin. And both guys are coming off you know, good winning streaks in the UFC. Larkin really kind of started to find his own near his you know, the last few fights in the UFC. And both guys were leveraging that and getting good deals to go across the line. And I like this because, you know, as we were talking about the Chael Sonnen and Tito Ortiz's earlier, this is kind of really building up the you know, not necessarily stars from another organization, but good top fighters that came on the market and Bellator wanted to get them and had kind of ideas of how they wanted to use them. And good on Bellator, you know, both guys signing, obviously being able to, you know, sell advertising on their shorts and kind of get out of the whole Reebok deal. And, you know, Bader talked a lot about that. But I thought this was, you know, win-win all the way around, at least in March anyway. Things have, you know, for Larkin haven't gone that great since. But, you know, both guys ended up getting great opportunities throughout the year. And yeah, I think win-win for all parties involved when it came to these signings.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, you know, beat it into the ground. I said it before, but, you know, these – I don't think guys like this, or really, I'm not sure anybody that UFC decides that they, you know, for whatever reason, aren't going to sign again, that Bellator picks up. They haven't really seemed to be making much of a difference business wise for Bellator. But certainly, if you want to look at the sporting aspect of it, obviously, you know, bringing in guys like Larkin and Bader and Phil Davis and all these guys that, you know, that they've brought in, certainly establishes some credibility. And when, you know, even if you bring in a guy like Larkin and he's lost a couple times, just having him in there and having him be a familiar name that people know, losing to your champion Diego Lima, or Douglas Lima, one of Lima brothers, makes him you know, more credible, and certainly makes their division more credible. And you know, Paul Daly, you know, same thing. And then Ryan Bader, you know, he's a guy that was on a winning streak in UFC, like you said, was that close to a title shot that I do think UFC made a big mistake in not signing that fight when they could have. You know, him coming in and winning their belt. Now, you know, arguably, you know, I think at the top, Daniel Cormier is a stronger champion. But if you look at their, you know, even their top 10, especially – you get down the list, Bellator arguably, you know, in that one division at least, their division rivals UFC. And you know, and then you get down to middleweight with Gegard Mousasi, and lightweight with Rory McDonald, Lorenz Larkin, and Paul Daly. I mean, they're building a nice little roster there. It may not be translating in terms of TV ratings yet. It maybe never will. In fact, this last Monday, they just set another record low on Spike, but that's another story for, you know, maybe a couple episodes from now. But, you know, they're trying. And, you know, and like you said, it's good for the fighters. I love the fact that they have another option. And I do like the fact that we get to see these, you know, these fights that, you know, we never would have got to see again, like Lorenz Larkin and Lima, you know, or Ryan Bader and, you know, well, Ryan Bader and Phil Davis we saw before, but on a different stage for a title, you know, that probably never would have happened in UFC. And yeah, and you mentioned Michael McDonald, who's going to be debuting earlier coming up this week. So,
yeah, that was the one I actually hadn't put that. We were kind of looking at the notes here. Yeah, I was just like, yeah, Michael McDonald. They also signed him. He was kind of just tired of I guess waiting around for UFC and was you know, kind of financially strapped and wanted a different opportunity. And yeah, we saw he's fighting this week, main eventing a show for Bellator to close out their 2017. So yeah, I think it was good in that they showed the rest of the UFC roster, I would say, because that's really who's pertinent here, is that they were there was another option out there and really enticing guys to fight out their contracts. Now you have some guys like Jacare Souza who decided just to re-up with the UFC and sign a long contract, I think 8 fights for whatever reason, which I think in this era is really dumb to do. However, you had other guys, you know, like Cub Swanson the other night fighting out his contract, and obviously it didn't work out so well for him, but he may have some interest and may get a better offer to go and get into Bellator's featherweight division and make some noise there. So I think these signings, and again, not just the guys that are the stars of yesteryear, but the middle of the pack lunch pail guys, but guys that are capable of doing some interesting things. And again, with Bellator having so many shows, they need names that people know. Even if it's just some hardcore fans, give me a reason to watch. And if this kind of bolsters some of their co-main events or what have you, they got some names. And I think that's a, I mean, look, just mentioned Michael McDonald's going to headline a show for them, this week. So it's, you know, I think it's been good. I think we'll see what happens, with their signings throughout the rest of the year. I expect them to be, equally aggressive unless, something changes with Viacom. But, you know, we'll see what this roster looks like at the end of 2018. Speaking of Bellator, the third biggest show of the month, a big announcement, and again, you're very business-minded, and as we know, Bellator making the announcement they're going to turn to pay-per-view in the summer with the aforementioned, going back to January, Chael Sonnen going against his blood rival in a fight we never used to versus Wanderlei Silva, a fight that we thought we were going to see in the UFC but never got a chance to happen after that that tough season, and finally going to headline a pay-per-view for Bellator in Madison Square Garden, of all places. Fedor versus Mitrione, that fight that was scrapped from San Jose, got announced for that. And also Lorenz Larkin, freshly signed of his free agency, getting a title shot in his first opportunity there. So this is interesting for a lot of reasons. You know, Bellator, typically known as a free product, and it had that one turn on pay-per-view in the Bjorn Revny era, but they decided to come back and announce that not only were they going to do a pay-per-view, they're also going to do it in Madison Square Garden, where UFC just ran a show a few months earlier. So what do you remember when you first heard this news, and then through the execution of the event, what do you think about it?
Well, I guess my first thought was that it was a bold move, but I kind of thought it was probably going to be a bad move. Given that, you know, the first fight did better than most people thought it would do, or the first pay-per-view, I should say. And this one, you know, I thought if they did as well as that, they'd be lucky. But it was going to cost them a lot more running Madison Square Garden with all the advertising they were doing, with the kind of names they had, the money they'd be spending. I thought I didn't like the idea of this being on pay-per-view. And I thought, like, being on – if this was on free TV – it probably would have done huge numbers. That said, you know, I also thought that when I saw Sonnen versus Wanderlei and Fedor versus Mitrione, I would have wagered hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars that neither one of those two fights would actually happen. And they did. So, you know, kudos to them. You know, those fights, they promoted them. They actually happened. So good on them. You know, when you talk about the execution, I mean, you know, again, the business, it was – you know, about what you would have expected, maybe a little bit worse. I think it did about 90,000 pay-per-view buys, which, you know, is a little worse than a bottom end UFC show. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. I do think they probably lost a lot of money. They did say that, you know, they're not necessarily going to be coming back with a regular schedule, but they will be back on pay-per-view at some point. So I think, you know, looking ahead to the new year, probably the, you know, maybe the Grand Prix finals, you know, with maybe another big match attached to that might be what you'd probably look at for pay-per-view. But again, it was something they tried. I like the idea of having, you know, they did Bellator NYC, which was the pay-per-view, but then they still had their numbered show for the pre-show. So it was Bellator 180, which had two title fights on the free TV portion, and then on the main card. And you also had the debut of Aaron Pico, which I don't think they had announced right away, but did happen, and that kind of didn't go like they planned. But again, you know, you got to try some stuff, and they did. And again, you know, you've got another person in the pay-per-view marketplace now to, you know, to challenge UFC. So you know, that's good. And again, again, you know, surprised that the event actually happened and went off, and we'll see where they go from there.
I didn't like the price point. I didn't like it at all. I thought it was too high, and I know they're trying to recoup some money. I thought for, I would say entry level, but still to me, they're still entry level. Again, you're trying to get people to buy a show based on a lot of the stars of yesteryear and obviously mixing it with some of their new talent. I would have rather see them do, I would have been interested if they'd done 30 or 35 and just a little bit, obviously less than a UFC event, considerably less. But you kind of maybe potentially get a few more people to buy it instead of trying to stream it. When I just heard that initial price point, and granted, there were some cable providers that they could do their own pricing. I just, the price point when it came out surprised me a lot.
Yeah, I get your point. I guess my initial thought when you mentioned it was, would you recoup enough buys to make up for the lost revenue? Like, so if you drop the price point by 25%, would you necessarily get 25% more pay-per-view buys? I don't know. Again, you know, even if you got 20% more, would it be worth it to get those extra eyeballs on your product? Maybe it would. I know there's a prevailing wisdom out there too that says that, you know, actually when you drop a price, sometimes you get less people buying it because they look at it as less than. You know what I mean? So if people are used to paying $50 or $60 for UFC pay-per-view, if they're going to buy the pay-per-view, they're going to buy the pay-per-view, whether it's $50, $40, you know, $30. But if they look at it and they see, oh, there's a pay-per-view on there. Oh, it's only $30. Oh, yeah, well, it must not be as good as UFC then. You know, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't think like that. But I know when you flip it the other way, when like WWE, for instance, raised their pay-per-view, and even UFC, when they raised their pay-per-view prices, their buys actually went up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think $5 or $10 makes that big of a difference, but certainly if you go, you know, if you went to like 25 or 30 and maybe even heavily marketed as that, maybe it would make a difference. I don't know. But, it's, you know, interesting. I never really, really thought about the price point, but I certainly would have minded paying less.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes we lose perspective because we're firmly in this bubble, right? And think it's tough to say. And that's trying to figure out Joe and Jane Q public that doesn't follow this all the time. What gets them to buy on a Saturday night is fascinating stuff. And that's why they have.
When you think about it, like if you know you're talking about Joe Q public and they look and they see a pay-per-view coming on Saturday, do you think they even know that it's not UFC? You know what I mean? They see Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva, Fedor, Matt Mitchell, and it's another UFC show for the average person, right?
Yeah.
So when you talk about entry point for a new person sampling Bellator, I don't even know if that necessarily factors in. To them, it's probably all the same.
Yeah, and also I wonder why, if the average person, average sports fan, whatever they're trying to attract, like what gets them to actually buy? Like, okay, I'm going to buy this right now.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff on free TV. I'm always fascinated by that. Like what convinces, obviously the Mayweather McGregor stuff that speaks for itself, right? Some of the other bigger shows and what have you that brings back a lot of the lapsed fans and stuff, you know, with Jones Cormier too, and they may see something and may get some friends together, whatever. But I'm just wondering, like the person just kind of flipping around, like I've never seen Bellator before, but I just want to check this out. I just feel like watching some fights tonight. Or I saw Chael Sonnen was it, right? It's just kind of like what motivates that person to do it? Just, you know, ancillary income? Like what is it? I'm always fascinated by that stuff. But let's go over the rest of the month. There's a few other fascinating things. We'll kind of round things out. We just talked about GSP in February, now it's being coming back. We got his first opponent, or who he's going to fight. Who's going to fight Michael Bisping for the middleweight title. However, when it was going to happen, we had no idea. We had no idea where it was going to be. We just knew the fight was going to happen. This is really bizarre press conference. Again, no date, no nothing announced. And Bisping had a few drinks, as he had mentioned, and was trying to kind of build things up with GSP. Was trying to play along, but kind of do it in his own way. Kind of a bizarre scene going on for the UFC 209 weekend there with that opening press conference. If a title fight happens in the forest and nobody sees it, does it make a sound? Bellator 174, we found that out with Julia Budd winning the women's featherweight title. Emoji shrug, I guess. Dana White, we talked about this public view with Tyron Woodley, jabbing back at Tyron Woodley, saying just simply shut up and fight. UFC and Fox 24 has announced Demetrius Johnson continuing his run towards history, rebooked to fight Wilson Hayes. And then also Jacare Souza taking on Robert Whittaker. Robert Whittaker would have a pretty big year in 2017. UFC 211 decided to get a few more fights announced for that, and it was really rounding out what would be a pretty great card. Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier, Sergio Pettis versus Henry Cejudo, and also Frankie Edgar versus Yair Rodriguez. Ben Rothwell against he was scheduled to fight Mauricio Verdum, got flagged by USADA for out of competition sample failure, and we would not hear anything more from him throughout the course of the year. UFC headed to Fortaleza, Brazil. Kelvin Gastelum going in his run, beating up old Brazilian legends, beating up Vitor Belfort. Edson Barbosa, fantastic knockout of Benil Dariush. And also Shogun Hua showing there's a little bit left in the tank, taking on John Volante and beating him by TKO. Dylan Danis, buddies with Conor McGregor, and also a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu ace, signed with Bellator. We're still waiting for the announcement of his first MMA fight. UFC 212 got to Kelvin Gastelum versus Anderson Silva, announced a very quick turnaround for Anderson Silva. Interesting stuff there. Matt Hughes would obviously have some issues going on later in the year with a really terrible truck accident. At the time, in March, was considering a comeback and possibly in Bellator. Imagine that. War Machine, a complete scumbag who deserves to die, found guilty on 29 charges in his assault against Christy Mack. Obviously, people have heard this story before, but just what a just complete scumbag. Dana White saying this is a complete turn of events, saying that McGregor Mayweather was definitely was going to fight the two guys. This fight was going to happen, but of course, with Dana White, you never believe what he was going to say. But he went from saying months earlier, "No way," to "Yeah, this thing is going to happen." UFC announced they were going to host some events in Scotland, the Netherlands, and Poland, continuing their, obviously, international interest. Speaking of international, UFC London, Jimmy Manuwa, nice little run here at the top of the light heavyweight division, knocking out Corey Anderson cold. Gunnar Nelson returning and submitting Alan Jabund to get back in the winning bracket. UFC Oklahoma City got a main event of Michael Chiesa versus Kevin Lee. Interesting enough, I remember that being announced and being like, that's a main event. BJ Penn returning again to fight against Dennis Seaver, a fight that was originally supposed to be Penn's return bout, and also Johnny Hendricks coming back to take on my buddy Maynard Tim Boach. UFC 213 got Alistair Overeem versus Mauricio Verdum 3 booked, and in Bellator 175, King Mo being Rampage in a rematch of their first fight, again going back to pay-per-view. March, all kinds of stars coming back, interesting stuff, but still kind of closing out a pretty uneventful, I don't say uneventful, but kind of a quiet first 3 months of the year. What stood out to you about March?
Yeah, not a lot there. I mean, a whole lot of table setting. You know, I kind of forgot about Ben Rothwell. Dylan Danis, yeah, I mean, they made a big deal about that when they signed him, and 9 months later, we still don't even have a fight announced. I guess, you know, out of all these, you know, probably the biggest thing would be that Dana White saying that, you know, that fight was actually going to fight, but we've kind of already talked about that. So, yeah, I guess when you talked about that UFC OKC getting Michael Chiesa and Kevin Lee, I kind of thought the same as you. It's like, what? That's a main event? But it kind of shows you that the what good promotion can do, because they had that press conference shortly after that where they, you know, kind of going over the whole season of fights like they tend to do from time to time. And by the time that was over, this was like one of the most looked forward to fight nights due to the heat between the two of those guys. So, you know, I think, yeah, just talking about that, I mean, it just seemed like kind of just some random fight announcement, but ended up turning into something that I think by the time the fight actually happened, people were really looking forward to. And then you look at further down the card, BJ Penn and Dennis Seaver. I remember, I think we were talking at that time and looking at a card, and then all of a sudden you just popped up, what, BJ Penn's fighting this weekend? Yeah, like it
yeah,
was like,
yeah.
You know, it was like, yeah, and meanwhile, like, we're all looking forward to this main event of Michael Chiesa and Kevin Lee, and it's like, oh, yeah, there's BJ Penn. You know, so it's like, it just kind of shows you that they still know what they're doing, and they can still promote stuff when they set their mind to it.
Certainly. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Well, I mean, we have been here almost an hour and a half, all kinds of topics on the board, January, February, March, and quite a kickoff to the year. Again, kind of slow stuff, but you look back at it, there's some interesting stuff. GSP, Brock Lesnar, and I think you're well put with a table setting for what we'd see throughout the course of the year. Before we let you go, Paul, however, I want to give you the chance to go ahead and promote stuff coming up. Obviously, your coverage for our very website, UFC Winnipeg on Saturday night, but also you do some stuff with MMA draws and the like. So I'm going to throw the mic to you, and the floor is yours.
Yeah, I'll be covering, like you said, UFC on Fox from Winnipeg this coming weekend. I'll be cage side, covering the show for WrestlingObserver.com. I cover myself and Ryan Frederick. We kind of alternate on the UFC coverage. So, you know, every other week you'll usually see me covering that. I've also got the UFC picks panel that I kind of run for the site. And I think we'll be doing that again this weekend and then one more for the pay-per-view at the end of the year. And then we'll kick off 2018, hopefully with our star-studded crew. And when I'm not on WrestlingObserver.com, you can find me over at MMADraws.com with coverage of all the big shows, articles on business. And, you know, I do every week, I do a weekend ratings report and pay-per-view buy rates, all that stuff.
Good stuff. So you can obviously check him out there on MMA Draws and our site as well. Boy, after 90 minutes, mouth gets a little dry, Paul.
Yeah.
Have fun this weekend. Be safe out there in the mean streets of Winnipeg and enjoy the fights on Saturday. Paul Fontaine, thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for stopping by, and thanks to all of you for hanging with us for an hour and a half. And I'm going to let you guys go. You have a lot of choices in your podcasting day, so I always appreciate that you make this one of your stops in your earbuds throughout the course of the day, and greatly appreciate it both for this site, my show, other shows, and so on. Thanks for the support now and always. So big thanks to Paul Fontaine. Thanks to all of you. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. And until next time, which will be what? April, May, and June, Q2, which will be coming up next week. Insert catchphrase here.